You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, guys, we're back with another Processing Blue. We got the man Mike K with us. Mike, how are you, sir?
Tired, but I'm really happy to be here. It's been a long time.
Does food taste better after a win for the reporters who cover the team during that week? Is everything just a little better?
I wish I could tell you yes, but unfortunately I missed out on the post-game food and didn't eat and just went straight to sleep when I got home. So days and months are kind of glaring into each other with this new baby here. So
life changes. Life change. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you've been through it once, but life definitely does change. Trade deadline this week, Mike. The Panthers did nothing. Should Panther fans be mad that Chase Young isn't a Panther, or Devontae Adams isn't a Panther, or that some Panthers are still here that they thought might be gone?
Well, I put this out on Twitter. I wrote it in a column. I think they were smart not to chase expiring contracts. This is a team that's 1-6. Unless you're landing a massive player difference maker, it didn't make a lot of sense, especially when you don't have a first round pick next year. There's a lot of uncertainty surrounding this franchise when you go 1-6. There are still 10 games left, but do you want to diminish your assets for next year when you don't know who the leadership's going to be? Obviously there's plenty of time for Fitterer and Reich to right the ship, but you also want to still make this job very desirable if it doesn't work out. And I think for the Panthers, it was smart to avoid gambling. Gambling's for winners, okay?
No.
Gambling is for winners. And I think for the Panthers, this was a situation where it should have been about adding to their draft nest egg for next year. They only have 6 picks, no first round pick. They had some players that had some interest. Devontae Jackson was a guy I heard had interest, but I guess the price just wasn't to their liking. We obviously saw some defensive backs get moved the last couple of weeks. Those same teams could have maybe been involved with Dante Jackson. Terrace Marshall got permission to seek a trade. Evidently, he did not have the interest or enough interest to make a deal. Brian Burns, they seem to be locked in on not trading him. And honestly, when you look at the return that Chase Young and Montez Sweat got for the Commanders, you say to yourself, well, that makes a ton of sense, because this season, Montez Sweat is outperforming Brian Burns, and Chase Young is playing at the same level statistically. So, you know, a second and third round pick individually, you know, what does that tell you about Brian Burns' market? I think right now the smart move for everyone is for everybody to take a breath and then readdress the negotiations in the offseason, because Brian Burns is tied with 8 other players for the 21st highest total in sacks this season. He's got 5 sacks. There are 8 players with 8 or more sacks in the league.
What?
He's not one of them. And so his negotiating power isn't great. And I think while he had a lot of leverage with the Rams offer being turned down last year, he similarly has less leverage with how the market played out this year. I think the Panthers have gained back some leverage here. And if I were them, I wouldn't want to pay him until I saw what came out of this year. I understand he's a locker room leader. I understand he's probably their best player, but from a negotiation standpoint, neither side is really in the best place to get the most out of a deal. Jeremy Chinn was a guy who got injured. I know that there was interest out there before he got placed on IR. That's unfortunate. Sometimes you wait too long to trade a guy and you pay for it. That's the risk you run. But I think from an overarching standpoint, when you have uncertainty about the future, creating more uncertainty by dealing away long-term cost-controlled assets doesn't make a ton of sense. Also, by the way, had they traded for Chase Young or Montez Sweat, those guys are in the final years of their deals. and they're playing as well as Brian Burns. So then you go from having one pass rusher who you can't see eye to eye with on a contract extension to competing contract extension talks with guys who are playing at an equal level. That is a recipe for disaster. Oh, and by the way, you've got to extend Frankie Luvu. You've got to figure out some. You're going to have an extension with Derek Brown down the road. Like, it didn't make a lot of sense. A lot of people wanted wide receivers. The only wide receiver that got dealt yesterday was Donovan Peoples-Jones, and he's kind of a middling third or fourth receiver.
Yeah.
You know, they did have some interest in wide receivers, but I think they didn't want to make a deal for a guy who was just going to be a part of the group. They want, if they were going to make a deal, it had to be for a notable X receiver. We've talked about it on the show before, you know, that Devontae Adams type. And clearly the Raiders did not want to move him. You know, I don't think I kind of agree with Steve Smith on Jerry Jeudy. I don't think he's a particularly great starting wide receiver. To me,
are you calling him a jag?
I wouldn't call him a jag, but I think I think that was harsh, but I agree with him. I think he's kind of just a regular starting wide receiver. I mean, he's a guy who's never had a 1,000-yard season. You know, he's playing with Russell Wilson. While everybody wants to hate on Russell for last year, he's actually playing extremely well right now. And, you know,
the truth.
And Jerry's not playing particularly well from a statistical standpoint or from an eye test standpoint. Very inconsistent. Cortland Sutton, again, big wide receiver, would have been different for this group. I just don't see him being a massive difference maker. Oh, and by the way, both of those guys would be making $13 million next year and have leverage in a negotiation. And I know I'm rambling a little bit here, but like Hunter Renfrow, if you watch the game on Monday, like, I don't know why anybody would trade for him with that contract. You know, I mean, he can't get on the field, and he is pretty redundant when you consider Adam Thielen, and I'm sure Clemson fans will fill up my inbox, but like Hunter Renfrow is fine. He's just kind of a redundant guy. The Panthers have like five slot receivers that they're using out of position. So, I mean, to add another one doesn't really make a lot of sense.
Right. I want to rewind you back to something you said at the beginning of that. You said the Panthers want to make sure this is a good job in case something were to happen with the leadership here. We saw the Las Vegas Raiders move their GM and coach after a 3-5 start. Do you think there's a chance the Panthers might move off of Reich and Fitterer this year?
Not during the season. I don't see that. I mean, look, the GM got the first overall pick. I don't think you make that move if you think that this is going to be a short-term project. I think Reich handing over play calling duties and holding himself accountable is a big deal. Let's see how the next 10 games play out. I mean, if they finish 3-14, then I think, yeah, it's probably likely that at least one of them is not back. Excuse me, but I think this is going to be a season that's evaluated in as a whole. I mean, they didn't really do anything coming out of the bye week other than have Reich turnover play call, right? Most teams in that position at 0-6 at the bye week would do something drastic. They would fire a guy who has a notable name on the coaching staff who otherwise is probably not that important. They would trade an underwhelming player who's getting paid a ton of money. They did not do either one of those things. They also doubled down and sat on their hands, to quote our great producer Drew, at the trade deadline. Like, this is a situation where I think, look, the coaching staff wanted DJ Chark. They wanted Miles Sanders. They wanted Justin Houston. Those guys have not worked out.
Right.
The front office went out and got Hayden Hurst and, you know, Von Bell, who have both played kind of substandard.
Yeah.
You know.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
David Tepper went out and spent all this money on this coaching staff who were all supposed to be these superior teachers in this great group. At some point, you've got to take your medicine, right? Like, for your misgivings, right? Like, that's the reality in life and in football and in all business. Sometimes you just have to let it play out. And look, they won on Sunday. That was a big deal. CJ Stroud and Bryce Young are going to be compared together for years.
Well,
they probably won't play again for another 2 to 3 years based on how the new 17-game scheduling goes, right?
Yeah.
And Bryce Young outperformed CJ Stroud. That was a huge message for them. And the rest of this month is of November. Well, I guess it just started now, but November is a massive month for this.
Let's talk about that November month. You got the Colts in the 4 p.m. game, so a lot of America is going to see the train wreck or the team that's ascending, one or the other. And then you follow that up, with some winnable games. You got the 2-6 Bears that you probably really want to beat because you don't want to give them the number one draft pick. And then you got the Cowboys that are playing well, and then you got the Titans. What do you see for the Panthers in these next group of games? You know, Alex was prognosticating, winning the next three. Do you see that? And, how do you see the rest of the month?
Well, I didn't think they would beat the Texans, and they just barely made it by, which kudos to them. But I had them when I did my prediction or a reevaluation of their schedule, and I had them going 5-12. And I had them beating Indianapolis without Anthony Richardson. I had them beating the Bears without Justin Fields. Actually, but that was prior to Justin Fields getting injured, losing to the Cowboys and then defeating the Titans in Nashville before we knew Will Levis could show off that cannon. Now, let's go through all these games, right? So they're going to play Indianapolis this weekend.
Yes.
You're without Richardson. They've got a really good running game. They have a really good running game, which has been the Panthers' kryptonite, as we know, on defense.
Well,
they can hold firm the way they did against Houston. I'm not expecting that. I think this game could get out of hand in the Panthers' favor. Similarly to what the Panthers have at wide receiver, the Colts really only have Michael Pittman. I mean, Alec Pierce is fine, but they're struggling to throw the... I mean, they're not struggling to throw the football, but they're struggling to find inconsistency. They're a high-scoring team, but Gardner Minshew has led them to an 0-3 stretch because he's so prone to turnovers. In four starts this season, I believe he has turned the ball over 9 times, 5 interceptions and 4 fumbles lost. If this Panthers team can be as opportunistic as they need to be, I think they will play well. You saw this past weekend against the Texans, they changed up their coverage to kind of affect the run game. They'd been like a cover 2, cover 4 team mostly. They played some cover 1 in this game. That was good. They played some single high. They evolved a little bit, and I think that's really important. They've got to continue to do that. I have them beating. I mean, and also we got to remember the underlying storyline: Frank Reich, his former team. You think he wants to win that game? That's the game ball he wants.
Well, last week was a Bryce game. This week is a Frank game,
right? And as we follow that stream of consciousness, the Bears game is the Tepper Fitterer game because they're going to be on national television. They did trade away the first overall pick. Ryan Poles has not done a good job for the Bears, but his lone achievement is getting what he got for the first overall pick.
Well,
and DJ Moore, Deontay Foreman have had their moments. They've also kind of shown why the Panthers found both to be pretty inconsistent. I think Deontay Foreman might be the highest variance player in the entire league. When he is good, he is great. When he is bad, it's like, how did he get even on the field? Because, like, look, I saw all the Twitter stuff when he had 3 touchdowns, but then you look this past week and he's...
I tweeted that out, too.
Yeah, he's averaging less than 3 yards a carry. I mean, he didn't play particularly well. And he's a guy who needs to be force-fed, and that's not really advantageous for an offense. So, DJ Moore has done a really good job. The problem is when he doesn't have consistent quarterbacks, his superpowers are diminished. His superpowers are making, off-the-mark catches, incredible catches, and breaking tackles. And so if the ball's so off the mark that he can't catch it, well, then he can't break tackles, right? Because you have to break the basket. DJ Moore has really proven me wrong in a lot of ways. I viewed him as like a top tier number 2 wide receiver. I think there's only really 8 true number 1s in the league. Well, now there's 9 because DJ Moore has played exponentially well. Still inconsistent, has his quirks, but I think he is a phenomenal player and he's going to be a phenomenal challenge for this team. I still think the Panthers pull off an upset on the road. I think, we'll talk about him a little bit later, but Bryce Young's starting to look like Bama Bryce. And then you get into the Cowboys. I think the Cowboys are going to smoke. I really do. Like, I think that's going to be a really tough.
Well, it depends on which version of Dak shows up, but yes.
Right, but I think the Dak's going to have a pretty lovely afternoon. That said, there's going to, you know, if David Tepper doesn't like visiting teams, oh, man, there's going to be a lot of stars in the
Yes.
They travel better than anyone. Well, mostly because they're all from across the country, and also the Lakers probably play at night, and the Yankees are season's over, so more Cowboys fans to show up. But anyway, and then you go to Nashville, and look, I mean, they had interest in Will Levis during the buildup to the draft. I mean, even as far back as last season, I heard about Will Levis and how much they admired him. And obviously he fell to the second round, played phenomenally against the Atlanta Falcons, an NFC South team, lit them up for four touchdowns. And look, I mean, I think it's up to Bryce Young to kind of have some high-powered offense there. Their defense is pretty good. Their offense has been wildly inconsistent. If the Panthers' defense can respond and play well and make everybody look good, that's a win
Let me stop you real quick. Okay, so you're saying that they won the last game. So you're saying there's a good chance they can win three of the next four games.
Those are winnable opportunities there. If they split, I still think that's a very big positive.
If they go 4-1, how does that change the trajectory of things around it?
I think it changes them a lot, and that's why I think, like, there's a lot of rush to judgment. I understand the fan base is not happy. They're sick of this mediocrity or worse. And, look, I think a lot of people draw in, and fairly, Scott Fitterer to Matt Rhule. He is the lasting image of that regime,
swag surfing,
right?
In the locker room after a win.
Like, yeah, that was interesting. Meanwhile, in Nebraska. But, like, I think that Scott deserves a lot of criticism. I do think that he has made some poor choices. A lot of their gambles from this offseason have not worked out on the surface so far. That said, it's very rare to see a team jump to number one from number nine and give up what they gave up, knowing that the GM is going to be a short timer, right? Like, that's just like, you've invested, you've had a plan. Like, if you don't follow that through, that's extremely reactionary, for better or worse. I also think this, you know, I think David Tepper learned from last time that hiring a head coach and then hiring a GM is not the best move. So if you're going to move on from Fitterer, you also have to consider moving on from Reich, who you've paid a ton of money along with his staff. I think there's a lot of decisions. And remember, being a general manager is not just about making draft picks and making trades. There's a lot that goes into it. You're managing a scouting department. You're managing a coaching staff. You're putting together a coaching staff with the head coach. So I think, like, it all really depends. This is going to be a big 10-game stretch for Scott Fitterer, and his job's largely done for the season. So I think...
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I also, you know, I drew the ire of a lot of fans last offseason when I said I didn't think this job was that appealing for a head coach. And we saw, you know, Ben Johnson drop out of the race. We saw D'Amico Ryans not take an interview. They ended up with Steve Wilks, who did not get a job, and Frank Reich, who interviewed for two jobs. Not to say those guys weren't appealing. I actually think Frank Reich was a logical hire in the wake of the Matt Rhule era. But I also think you look at what Shane Steichen's doing in Indianapolis. They're one of the top scoring teams in the league. They drafted a dynamic quarterback in Anthony Richardson, who's obviously done for the season with a shoulder injury. So there's that. But a lot of the, you know, Sean Payton, who was also a retread, got off to a pretty rough start in Denver. Now they're playing pretty well. I think there's a lot of thought that needs to go into it. And if you bought into Frank Reich and Scott Fitterer as a tag team enough to leverage all of those assets and trade up for number one, so you could do something, you know, find that quarterback, I think you have to kind of really be patient. It's maybe just for this season, but like there's 10 games left. I don't think the playoffs are in sight. I never thought this team was going to make the playoffs. Remember, I had them at 8-9 and
I was a lot more optimistic, but
listen, if they finish 5-12 or 6-11, I think everybody's back. At least from a big overarching stand. I mean, I think there will be changes to the coaching staff. Obviously, Ejiro Evero is a guy who's going to be viewed as a prime head coaching candidate. I think he did a phenomenal job on Sunday. And so we'll see how it goes. But, I mean, look, this is a team that flipped over half of its roster. It kept all but three. I mean, it kept three coaches from the previous staff. Otherwise, everybody's different. They have a new defensive scheme. They have two coordinators who are very young and new to doing what they do. I mean, Evero only has 1 year coordinator experience. Thomas Brown just called his first game. Like, there's a lot of change here, and you know, people don't like the word rebuild. You can call it a retooling, a building, whatever. I mean, you can call it Looney Tunes if you want. Like, I let's call it what it is. This team was getting flipped over. It's a philosophy change. And look, the division's terrible. They are terrible. This is the worst division in football. It's no question about it. But this team also overachieved significantly with Steve Wilks, and that's a credit to Steve Wilks. They were not a good team last year, and so the expectations were high after winning 7 games. This was a 5-win team last year. They won 7 games. And so I think if they can kind of rebound and say, you know, hey, they've changed all this stuff. There's rationale there. Fans might not like it, but I understand why Tepper is being patient here.
Well, I mean, we'll see. One thing that could change the equation is that number one draft pick starts playing like the number one draft pick. And Sunday, he looked a lot more, to your point, like Bama Bryce. He was making those off-schedule plays, scrambling. There was one play where he went right, came back left, hit Adam Thielen over the top. Thielen made a great catch. But that was more what, you know, we saw out of Bryce at Alabama. Was that the play calling, or was that him just getting more comfortable?
Well, I think during the bye week, a lot of things needed to be said. I think when you have a new play caller and he's in your ear and he says, hey, don't be afraid to go make a play and bail me out and make me look good. Not that that's what he said, but that sometimes does happen in my experience in covering the league. Sometimes a pep talk can kind of get you out of your overthinking. I think they've done a really good job of limiting communication to make it more productive and more efficient. I think that Bryce's head's not swimming. I think it's unfair to say that they've simplified the offense, but I think they've simplified the language. And I think that that's really important. You know, instead of having a long sentence to read out of like random words, maybe it's a couple of words.
Sure.
And that's really good. That's a good one, right? They talk about it all the time in our profession. If you can write tight, you can write. You know what I mean? And so I think that's really appealing for Bryce. I think he's able to think out there. He's not overthinking the play. I think he knows what this team is. He knows who he trusts. Very clearly, Adam Thielen. What I was most impressed by, though, is we saw brutal, brutal drops by Jonathan Mingo and DJ Chark in the first half. And Bryce still went back to them and got big plays out of them. That is veteran leadership. That is smart quarterbacking. And frankly, it's a really appealing growth standpoint for a rookie quarterback. And I think if you're the Panthers, you feel really good about Bryce Young moving forward. Look, he needs to make off-schedule plays. Josh McCown called it his superpower, and that's what it is.
Well, Mike, I got to ask you about Tommy Trimble and Chuba Hubbard are playing, and Hayden Hurst and Miles Sanders aren't playing as much. So we thought that situation would be flip-flopped. Does that surprise you?
No, not at all. I think when you're playing the amount of 11 personnel that this team's playing, and now that they're running a little bit more power because of Bradley Bozeman's limitations, I think that Chuba Hubbard's the right guy to run north to south. I think Tommy Trimble, when you play 11 personnel at tight end, you have to be able to block, and he is far the superior blocker. To Hayden Hurst, he's also proven to be a playmaker as well. And I think those are two guys. They're very close friends. They're both 2021 draft picks. They've worked really hard. When we were at Wofford, they were on the drugs machine 30 minutes after practice. Like, this is that the teammates have really appreciated their work ethic. I think the coaching staff has as well. And frankly, Hayden Hurst has played horribly the last couple of weeks. Miles Sanders has gotten off to a really rough start, and they need to get production while they can. I mean, this is a big boy league. A lot of people are getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I actually credit the coaching staff and front office for going with the guys who are Matt Rule holdovers, who are on rookie contracts, instead of the guys that they really paid pretty substantial money to. And I think they're letting performance speak for itself. And I think there's a lot of young guys on this team on the depth chart that are going to be inspired by that.
Well, we've talked to you so long. We know you had a lot on your mind, but I know there's some more you have on your mind. So we're going to go to my favorite part of the show, K-Sticks.
Thomas Brown's the most impressive person in this entire organization right now. I can't overstate how impressed I was with how he called that final drive against the Texans. I mean, he was balanced, he was smart, he took yardage when he could. Where there's some blips, especially that fourth down play early on in the game, sure. But he was feeling it out. I think when you watch his press conferences, I could listen to that guy talk football for the rest of my life. He's just a really impressive guy. And I know a lot was made out of Evero, a lot was made out of Jim Caldwell and Dom Capers and Josh McCown and all those guys. I think Thomas Brown is a guy who talks, carries himself like a future head coach. Clearly, he's all in on Bryce. I appreciate the way he explains his thought process. I love the no block, no rock. Some might think that's a little corny, but I think it's actually a really great way of simplifying communication, right? Like, that was the whole thing we just talked about with Bryce. And I think when you look at Thomas Brown's upside, it's genuinely intriguing for this team because Frank Reich ripped the Band-Aid off. He gave the play calling to Thomas Brown. You could see how emotionally invested Frank Reich is in Thomas Brown when you watch the post-game game ball ceremony or whatever in the locker room, when you talk to him in a press conference. Thomas Brown is going to be set up to succeed. I think the Panthers have set him up to succeed. And I think a lot like Bryce Young, he's going to learn on the job and try to grow gradually week to week.
Well, all right. Well, Mike, thanks for coming on with us. I love Mike K-Sticks at the end of the show every week. And no matter where you're listening to us, like, follow, subscribe. You can also do word of mouth. We're on every podcast platform you can find. So if you want to download Mike and hear his takes in the car, please do as well. And we'll be back next week with another episode of Processing Blue. Mm-hmm.